Okay, is everyone ready to share and open up their hearts and, yeah, look deep inside and really get to know one another? We all ready? Okay. At the end, we're going to have a real elite group here. I don't know. Okay. Today we have two topics on the agenda. The art of not listening and the joy of breaking intimate relationships. We'll start with not listening, paradoxically. The art of not listening is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 7th canto. Fortuitously enough, it's described in chapter 14, which is the chapter about Varnashram, where Yudhisthira Maharaj asks Narad Muni to describe how householders can attain liberation according to the instructions of Vedic knowledge. Grahasthetam padavim vidina yena chandrasa yayad devarishe bruhi madrisho grihamudhadhi. Narad Muni's being asked. Narad Muni replied, "My dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood. And instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna, Vasudev. How to satisfy Vasudev in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord." Next verse. Shrinvan bhagavato bhikshnam avatara katamritan shradhano yata kalam upasanta janavritaha satsangach chanakai sangam atmajayat majarishu bimunchain muchamaneshu swayam snapnavad uttitaha. A grahastha must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these activities are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus, one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. Here, Shrinvan Bhagavata Bhikshnam Avatara Katamritam Shradhana Yatakalam. Yatakalam, Prabhupada glosses, according to the time, Prabhupada says, generally a grahastha can find time in the evening or in the afternoon. In India, they find some time in the afternoon. Otherwise, in the West, we have time in the evening. So that time should especially be used for association of devotees, especially advanced devotees, and for hearing the nectar of Krishna. And by that constant hearing, one becomes detached. Yavadartam upasino dehe gehe chapandataha virakto raktavat tatra nirloke naratam yaseit. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Purport: this is the picture of ideal family life. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy about the goal of life, Ramananda Roy described it in different ways, according to the recommendations of the revealed scriptures. And finally, Sri Ramananda Roy explained that one may stay in his own position, whether as a Brahmin, a Shudra, a Sannyasi, or whatever, but one must try to inquire about life's goal, atato brahmajigyasa. This is the proper utilization of the human form of life. So this is one of the arts of household or life, how to appear very much attached, but actually be detached. Ganate Jataya Pitaro Putra Bratara Surido Pare Yadvadanti Yadich Chanti Chanumo Deita Nirmanha Nirmamaha. An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, yes, that is all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. Now, this is the art of not listening. In Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says that the self-realized person becomes indifferent to whatever's been heard, whatever there is to be heard. There may be so many friends and relatives and so on who give their valuable advice about increasing material entanglement. And here Narad Muni advises Yudhisthira how to relate, as they say, to those people. One should not argue with them, one should not create big debates and misunderstandings and conflict, friction. One should agree, yes, what you say is all right. But internally, so anumodita, he should agree. Yat ichchanti, whatever they wish, whatever they say, anumodita, he should agree. But nirmama, without taking them seriously. Without taking them seriously. So this, from Srimad Bhagavatam, is the art of not listening. Any questions? Of course there are no questions. No one was listening. Yes.
And you say yes, yes, and you don't do anything about it, and then they might wonder.
Yes, they might wonder. And then they approach you and say, I thought you were going to do this. And then you say, oh yes, yes. You'll be surprised to find out how long you can go on. Any other questions? Yes.
How about obligation to your inner voice?
Obligation to your inner voice. Which one?
That conflicts with Sasana status.
Oh, that inner voice. Just shut the little creep up. That inner voice, just shut him up. Who wants to hear from him? What do they say? No, you have to explain to him, no, actually it's not good to put mud in your mouth. Or just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother argued with the child that, no, actually it's not so good to eat dirt. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, everything is one. And then Sachi Devi had to explain to her little Mayavadi that there's a difference between one thing and another. So if you've got one of these little nonsense voices inside of you, then you can try and reason with him. I know you want me to break the regulative principles. I know that you want me to sleep 10 hours a day. I know that you want me to eat food that's cooked by non-devotees. And I know that you want me to do this and you want me to do that. But, you know, and then you explain by it, that's the voice of the mind, and you can answer with the voice of the intelligence. So that's one way. And finally, even the intelligence will just see that I'm wasting my time trying to reason with this guy and just, you know, ignore him. Tell him to, you know, take a hike, as they say. Not take, that's here. Anumoditaha. And then what was the next word? A good word, let me just find it. Nirmama. That you say yes, yes, but don't take it seriously. So nonsense propositions shouldn't be taken seriously. It amazes me sometimes how philosophical ideas or so-called philosophical ideas or just ideas, philosophical or non-philosophical, start floating around and devotees take them seriously. When they don't deserve it, they should just be laughed at or, you know, just given strange looks or whatever. Not taken seriously. The mind has so much nonsense to say. It can come up with non-stop suggestions for forgetting about Krishna. And you should, one has to become expert in saying to the mind, forget it. Okay? The inner voice is okay when it agrees with the outer voice of Shastra and the spiritual master. Otherwise, the inner voice should be rejected in favor of the superior outer voice of Vedic knowledge. Another question was there? Yes?
If you say yes, yes, and you just don't take people seriously in what they say, can it also be that you are in somewhat artificial to people?
Yes, it's a kind of... you can say, we take it as dishonesty, don't we? We take it as being inauthentic or artificial or dishonest. But it's a kind of social culture also. Those who spend much time in India can see this culture raised to a fine art. You don't want to say no to the person because that's impolite, just to say, you know. In America we say, you nuts, buddy. You know, New York, you say, you've got to be out of your mind. You want me to do that? Oh, get off it. Hey, crazy guy. But in our culture and society, we don't do that. We say, all right. I'll think about that. That sounds, got something going there. Okay. And you don't take it very seriously, but you don't insult the person. But he has to understand that you're not him, and that you're also not his order taker, and that you have your own life to lead, and that you may choose to listen to someone other than him. He'll just have to get along with that. So it can be taken as a lie, or it can be taken as a politeness. There's so many... I mean, if we actually, in all of our social dealings, just laid it on the line all the time, life would be unbearable. Life would be absolutely unbearable if we just, you know, bared our feelings at every moment. Could I speak to you for a minute? You really want to talk to me? I mean, I'm busy. Why don't you, you know, take a walk? You, I spoke to you 2 days ago, and you were nonsense 2 days ago. You want me to talk to you again? You know, or... so many different things. We see people, even ordinarily, we see, nice to see you. What percentage of the time is that true? So it's a social, and here it's advised. We may have our own concoction about what's truthful, what's untruthful, what's polite, and what's impolite. But here Narad Muni, who's one of the Mahajans, is advising that this is okay. That your materialistic friends and relatives and associates, when they come up to you with all sorts of suggestions for increasing your material entanglement, you can just say to them, yes, yes, and not take it seriously. We have it on good authority that it's okay to do that. Yes.
There's a sort of question leading on from that, which reflects another one of the titles in the original package.
Oh, okay. Don't want to miss anything here.
Mm-hmm. It's that sometimes when we've been in Maya, without realizing it, we get involved in different relationships, which when we become a little sober again, we wish we hadn't. So then we need to know the art of, or the joy of breaking the intimate relationship.
That's the rest of today's lesson. It's coming, don't worry. By the end of the class, you'll all know how to say goodbye to me. Any other questions? Yes?
How one can understand if he's in labor to be detached inside and attach outside is in proper track?
How can we understand whether our endeavor to be externally, to appear externally attached but be internally detached is on the right track? We have to judge by the directions of the Shastra, spiritual master, sadhus, advanced devotees, using our own intelligence. We have to hear from these sources and judge that way. Therefore, it's suggested here that the householder should always be hearing Krishna Katha. Then his intelligence becomes purified, and then he knows what to do. And in fact, automatically he becomes, because this is the result. What is that? Janayati ashu vairagyam gyanam shayadahoitakam. By hearing about Vasudev, Krishna, automatically one becomes detached. He doesn't have to artificially do something. The artificial renunciation appears in the absence, if it appears at all, in the absence of real renunciation, real detachment. The artificial detachment, artificial show of detachment, is there when there's no real detachment. But by hearing about Krishna, real detachment comes. So therefore, the householders are recommended here by Narada Muni. You always hear about Krishna. And then your natural detachment will come, real detachment. You know, I don't want to be artificial. This is, then don't be artificial. Just hear about Krishna, and the genuine thing will come. Yes?
I thought it's important to mention that the one who's, everyone's the gainer by this so-called artificial detachment. Like, persons that you're becoming detached from are also benefited by your detachment.
Yes, by real detachment, everyone benefits. False detachment is another kind of thing. Just a show where you're not really detached and then you just get attached in some other nonsense way. But by genuine detachment that proceeds from hearing and chanting under proper guidance, everyone is benefited. That's a fact. Shall we plunge ahead into the next joy? Joy. Okay. Breaking intimate relationships. This can be analyzed, the joy of breaking intimate relationships can be analyzed as having two subdivisions. The first subdivision is breaking your own intimate relationships, and the second subdivision is breaking the intimate relationships of others. In this way, spiritual life is full of joy. As it happens, there's an entire chapter on this topic in the teachings of Queen Kunti, which was mentioned in an earlier class in the temple. You gave that class, Mithya Krishnamash. Quoted from Kunti Devi, right, quoted from Kunti Devi. Ata vishvesha vishvatman vishvamurtesh vakeshume snehapasham imam chindi dritam pandushu vishnishu. The chapter is called Cutting Off Ties of Affection. Here Kunti Devi is intimately connected with the Pandavas, who are her sons, and with the Vrishnis, who are the members of her parental family. So, Prabhupada comments, a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belonged to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes, but for the benefit of the massive population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a Brahmin, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramchandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a Brahmin, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. The Lord, out of his affinity toward a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the way for his going back to Godhead. As long as I think, I belong to this religion, I belong to this color, and so on, there's no possibility of becoming Krishna conscious. As long as one thinks that one is American, Indian, or African, that one belongs to this family or that family, or that one is the father, mother, husband, or wife of this or that person, one is attached to material designations. I'm spirit soul, and all these attachments belong to the body. But I'm not this body. This is the essence of understanding. If I'm not this body, then whose father or whose mother am I? The supreme father and mother is Krishna. We are simply playing the parts of father, mother, sister, or brother, as if on stage. Maya, the material nature, is causing us to dance, telling us, you are a member of this family and a member of this nation. Thus we are dancing like monkeys. Kunti Devi prays, please sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen. We are thinking, this is my own, that is my own, but this is moha, illusion. Janasya mohoyam, aham mam eti. Now, how does this illusion come into existence? It begins with the natural attraction between a man and woman. A male seeks a female, and a female seeks a male. This is true not only in human society, but also in bird society, beast society, and so on. This is the beginning of material attachment. When a man finds a woman and they unite, this attachment becomes even more firmly established to your mito prityagrantamahu. Now, after the attachment increases to some degree, the man and woman look for an apartment in which to live together, and then, of course, the man needs to earn money. When they are well settled, they must have children, and also some friends to come and praise them. Oh, you have such a nice apartment and such nice children. In this way, one's attachment increases. A student's education, therefore, should begin with brahmacharya, which means freedom from sexual attachment. If he can, he should try to avoid all this nonsense. If not, he can marry, and then after some time, enter vanaprastha, retired life. At that time, one thinks, now that I have enjoyed this attachment so much, let me leave home. Then the man travels all over to various places of pilgrimage to become detached, and the wife goes with him as an assistant. After 2 or 3 months, he again comes home to see that his children are doing nicely, and then again goes away. This is the beginning of detachment. When the detachment is complete, the man tells his wife, now go live with your children, and I shall take sannyas, the renounced order of life. This is final detachment. The whole Vedic way of life is meant for detachment, and therefore Kunti prays, kindly help detach me from this family attraction. This is Kunti Devi's instruction. So this is the Vedic way of life, and Srila Prabhupada elucidates it very clearly for our understanding, for our benefit. There are many examples, of course, in Srimad Bhagavatam and other writings of householders who've, in the mature stage, given up their householder life. Of course, in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, it came earlier in his life. Tasyaiva me ghasya paravaresho vyasakta chittasya griheshva bhikshnam nirvedamulo dvijasaparupo yatra prasakto bhayam ashudhatte. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, has graciously overtaken me in the form of a Brahmin's curse. Due to my being too attached to family life, the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that only out of fear I will detach myself from the world. Purport: Maharaj Parikshit, although born in a family of great devotees, the Pandavas, and although securely trained in transcendental attachment for the association of the Lord, still found the allurement of mundane family life so strong that he had to be detached by a plan of the Lord. Such direct action is taken by the Lord in the case of a special devotee. Maharaj Parikshit could understand this by the presence of the topmost transcendentalists in the universe. The Lord resides with his devotees, and therefore the presence of the great saints indicated the presence of the Lord. The king therefore welcomed the presence of the great rishis as a mark of favor of the Supreme Lord. So this theme is repeated many times, that if one is sincere, then Krishna may act personally to free us from the last vestiges of material attachment. Yes, Prabhupada used to quote, yasyaham anugranami harishe tadhanam shanai. If I'm very favorable to someone, then I make him a failure in material life so that he becomes detached. Mataji?
In which Prabhupada says that if the wife and children are devotees, then actually
there's no need to leave family life. It's in Bhagavad Gita as it is,
that one can make householder life very congenial simply by chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping the Lord at home. That's stated, and that's a fact. But that fact is stated in one or two places in Prabhupada's books. And from that we can understand that we may not want to say all of the strongest things in the beginning. So we may be encouraged that you don't have to leave family life, you stay at home and chant Hare Krishna and make your householder life nice. And that's a fact also. There's a time and a place for everything. So there's an appropriate place and time for householder life. So, as we mentioned the other day, one who's accepted householder life should be cheerful about it and perform his duties responsibly. Everyone has accepted some responsibility, and we have to act accordingly. Not that after accepting the responsibility of a householder, accepting the life of a householder, then I try to live like a sannyasi. If one has taken up the life of a householder, then he should live as a householder, and not artificially the next day decide that really his heart is telling him that he ought to be a sannyasi. So, in that case, it's not that all is lost, now I've become a householder and my spiritual life is finished. He should arrange things in such a way that his householder life is nice in Krishna consciousness. And that's told here by Narad Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj, how to do that. How to disregard the mundane advice of so-called friends and relatives, how to be very much engaged in hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord. How to externally appear attached, but inwardly be not very much attached at all. And then householder life is a nice situation for Krishna consciousness. Stane stita shutigatam tanuvam manobi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you don't have to change your position, you stay in your position and hear about Krishna. But then in the mature stage, it's not that what was good for me at 30 or 40 is also good for me when I'm 50, 60, and 70. So, just like for the kids, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was saying, you know, spoil them. But, you know, when the kid is 60, you don't want to spoil them the same way. Mm-hmm. The little kid who's playing in his sandbox when he's 4 or 5, that's just fine. That's lovely. You're building such beautiful sandcastles. But if he's still building sandcastles into his 60s, as many people in their 60s do, it's time, you know, for some grown-up to come by and, you know, maybe even give those castles a little kick. Something else here? Okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu provides another example. Quite a dramatic example. He was only 20 or 25 years old. He had a lovable, beautiful wife and a devoted, affectionate mother, yet he gave up everything and took sannyas, the renounced order of life. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a grihastha, a householder, he was so much honored that merely by the direction of his finger, he was able to enlist thousands of people to join him in a civil disobedience movement. In Nadia, the city where he lived, his position was very respectable, and physically he was very beautiful. Yet he gave up his young, faithful, beautiful wife, his affectionate mother, his position, and everything else. This is called vairagya, renunciation. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave up the smaller world of home and family for the larger world of Krishna and humanity at large. Yes?
There was one thought that came up in relationship to the verse of the Lord's special mercy. Prabhupada, he's telling the story of his own life, an old lecture, like in the 60s, late 60s, and he said, this was the special mercy upon me. He said, I saw it in my own life that Krishna reigns in such a way.
Prabhupada many times used to quote that verse in relationship to his own life. Yes.
And he would say he would dream at night that taking renounced life would be horrible. Yeah. And Bhakti Siddhanta was calling him and he would wake up thinking this was horrible.
So. And Prabhupada said, "But and now I am happy."
Yeah. And he also Vyasa said that I had several children, now I have so many children.
Yes.
I gave up a few, and now I have so many.
Yes. And Prabhupada said, and without botheration of wife. Many other examples were there. Raghunath Das Goswami, the example is worth noting because it was by the grace of superior devotees and by the grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu that he was able to free himself from material entanglement. In his case, he was desiring, although he had a beautiful wife who was like the goddess of fortune, and he was a member of an extremely wealthy family, like millionaires today, big millionaires. Still, he was desiring to get out of family life, and he couldn't. His family was forcibly keeping him. But when he pleased Lord Nityananda Prabhu, then by the grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, it became possible. Krishnadas Kaviraj also got out of his family life and went to Vrindavan. And as you pointed out, Srila Prabhupada also did that. Another example of a person who gave up materialistic family life, he was not at all involved in Krishna consciousness, was Yayati Maharaj. He told a story to his wife, a parable, indicating his own position. He begins, "My dearly beloved wife, daughter of Shukracharya, in this world there was someone exactly like me. Please listen as I narrate the history of his life. By hearing about the life of such a householder, those who have retired from householder life always lament." Purport. Persons who live in the village or town are called Gram Nivasi, and those who live in the forest are called Vanavasi or Vanaprastha. The Vanaprasthas, who have retired from family life, generally lament about their past family life because it engaged them in trying to fulfill lusty desires. Prahlad Maharaj said that one should retire from family life as soon as possible, and he described family life as the darkest well, hitvatmapatam grihamandhakupam. If one continuously or permanently concentrates on living with his family, he should be understood to be killing himself. In the Vedic civilization, therefore, it is recommended that one retire from family life at the end of his 50th year and go to vana, the forest. When he becomes expert or accustomed to forest life or retired life as a vanaprastha, he should accept sannyas. Vanam gato yad dharima shriyeta. Sannyas means accepting unalloyed engagement in the service of the Lord. Vedic civilization, therefore, recommends four different stages of life: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. One should be very much ashamed of remaining a householder and not promoting oneself to the two higher stages, namely vanaprastha and sannyas. So again, the same theme is repeated, that there's an arrangement according to the varnashram system for each stage of one's life. In the beginning, brahmachari life, then grihastha life, then vanaprastha life, and then sannyas life. Not that one should remain in the grihastha life the whole time. That relationship is very intimate between husband and wife because service is there. The wife is dependent and the husband is responsible, and the wife renders service in so many ways, seeing to the happiness of the husband, the comfort of the husband, taking care of the children, everything. So the husband is naturally very much indebted to the wife and goes on feeling responsible and obliged. But still, therefore, it's very difficult to give up householder life. These feelings in the heart are very strong. But one has to break those attachments. In Bhagavad Gita, it said, Asanga Shastrena Dridhena Chitva. The material existence is compared to a banyan tree with so many roots and so many branches and so many leaves and going this way and that way. Very complex and entangling. But Krishna says that with the weapon of detachment, asanga shastrina, dridhena, with great determination, chitva, one has to cut oneself off from those entanglements. So it's, yes.
I have a question. In the earlier days here in the West, there used to be a system, the Celtic system.
The which system?
System, the Celts, the Celtic people.
The Celts, huh?
And they used to have the same
idea
for women. Hmm. Which means girls from 7 to 14, from 14 to Exas, they went to the forest and they were teached in astrology and in the herbs, how to use herbs, also the ritualistics. Many things, and they went back to their villages to work this out, to keep the villages in good health and good.
But that's a very different thing.
Yes, but I was wondering.
That's until they were 14?
14 to 21, then they could also choose if they went to celibate life or marriage life. So I was just wondering, isn't there something comparable?
Is there something comparable? The Celtic system was, you're telling, that the young girls from 7 till 14 or 20 would go off to the forest, and they would live in some group there in the forest, and then after some time they would come back to the village. And then they'd teach, in the forest they'd learn astrology and herbs and so many things, and then come back. Is there anything comparable in the Vedic system? No. Not that I know of. For boys, it's there. For the girls, the general system was that they should stay home with their families. They'd be protected by the father, and they'd be trained by their mother. Still, you see, in India, the little girls are taking care of the children, they're assisting the mother in so many ways, so they're expert in all household affairs. So that was the Vedic system. The girls were not sent off here and there. They would stay at home under the protection of the family. I don't know of any arrangement for forest living. Sometimes, just like Sita Devi, when her husband went to the forest, she also went to the forest. Or Devahuti, when her husband went. Or Archie, the wife of Prithu Maharaj. When he was performing austerity, she also, along with her husband. Or Gandhari, the wife of Dhritarashtra. But not that the girls would go off alone and be tapasvinis. Not generally. In a group, there's no such mention in Srimad Bhagavatam. Maybe something was sometimes there. But it's not part of the standard Varnashram system. Yes.
In Islam, we have this problem from another angle. We have to learn to be detached from our family, from our past lives.
Hmm. Yes, that also. We'll come to that. Of course, Prabhupada said, I was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam where it's mentioned that attachment for one's family and wife and children is so strong that although the personality of Godhead is unconquerable, if one can give up that attachment, one conquers even the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada quoted that verse on a morning walk in Vrindavan one time, and he said that this was the advantage of you Western people. You were not very much attached to family. So from that point of view, it was easier for the Westerners to become Krishna conscious, because somehow or other, for whatever reason, they had that detachment from family affairs. So they were able to join Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna consciousness movement. We'll come to a whole discussion about that. Yes?
Just one comment about the vanaprastha and going to the forest.
Mm-hmm.
When Prabhupada made the Bombay project, he said this will be for the vanaprastha to come here and practice Krishna consciousness, because in the modern age people can't go to the forest.
Yes.
So the retired men can stay with us and practice.
Yes, it should be noted that particularly our Bombay project, and even more so our Vrindavan project, was especially meant to provide facility for respectable gentlemen to retire from family life as vanaprasthas. Vanam gato yad, Prabhupada said, who can go to the forest in the present age? So vanam especially means Vrindavan forest, Vrindavan. One should go to Vrindavan, and for that reason Srila Prabhupada created this Krishna Balaram temple. He was quite disturbed and even angry when he saw that the Vrindavan guest house was filling up with householders and women and children, because he said that was not the purpose, and that it would disturb the whole atmosphere. The atmosphere for vanaprasthas is not an atmosphere full of little infants and women wandering around and you know, engaged in household affairs. It's a different atmosphere. So Prabhupada wanted Vrindavan, our Vrindavan project, to be especially for that. Something else? There's a charming sentence in Srimad Bhagavatam where Prabhupada relates some of his, describes in another way his own departure from family life. He was commenting on some cheating, and he said, we also had the same opportunity to cheat the family members and leave home to engage in the service of Srimad Bhagavatam. Such cheating was necessary for a great cause, and there is no loss for any party in such transcendental fraud. Now, let's see. It's in first canto, but I don't have it marked here where that's from. And someone else might be able to say. Oh, here's another statement from Prabhupada. Prabhupada's quoting on, commenting on Sarva Dharman Pratyaja, Mahamekam Shodhanam Bhaja. This may seem a simple instruction to follow, but invariably our reaction is, oh, surrender? Give up? But I have so many responsibilities. And Maya illusion says to us, don't do it, or you'll be out of my clutches. Just stay in my clutches, and I'll kick you. It is a fact that we are constantly being kicked by Maya, just as the male ass is kicked in the face by the she-ass when he comes for sex. Similarly, cats and dogs are always fighting and whining when they have sex. These are the tricks of nature. Even an elephant in the jungle is caught by the use of a trained she-elephant, who leads him into a pit. Maya has many activities, and in the material world, her strongest shackle is the female. Of course, in actuality, We are neither male nor female, for these designations refer only to the outer dress, the body. We are all actually Krishna's servants. In conditioned life, however, we are shackled by the iron chains, which take the form of beautiful women. Thus, every male is bound by sex life, and therefore, when one attempts to gain liberation from the material clutches, he must first learn to control the sex urge. Unrestricted sex puts one fully in the clutches of illusion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu officially renounced this illusion at the age of 24, although his wife was 16 and his mother 70, and he was the only male member of the family. Although he was a Brahmin and was not rich, he took sannyas, the renounced order of life, and thus extricated himself from family entanglement. So here again we see the theme repeated that we were discussing the other day, that varnashram at every stage means restriction. Restriction of sense gratification. Brahmacharya life means training in restriction. Householder life means restricted life. Vanaprastha life, further detachment. And sannyas, complete detachment. The whole theme in all four ashrams is detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna. Any other questions? Yes?
Why did Prabhupada consider taking sannyas horrible?
Why did he consider it horrible? Prabhupada presented himself as being a family man with attachment to his family and home. So naturally, when one is happily living at home, or even unhappily living at home, with wife and children and so on, the thought of taking sannyas is fearful. It provokes anxiety or agitation or actual fear. I had experience. I went to one of our temples, Los Angeles Temple, I can say, and somehow or other I wound up with such a verse about detachment from family life and accepting the Vanaprastha order. Krishna always gives me these verses. Actually, I'm favored by the statistics. So many verses run in favor of this point of view. Anyway, I was making the point that one has to accept the Vanaprastha order. And after the lecture, one of the many nice grihasthas in the Los Angeles community raised his hand and said that, Maharaj, you said this, but isn't it a fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disapproved of sannyas in this age? So I said, yes, it was true. And we could talk about that tomorrow. But today we're not talking about sannyas, we're talking about Vanaprastha ashram. Okay, then again, the next hand. Maharaj, isn't it true that it says in Shastra that in Kali Yuga no one should accept sannyas? Again, well, there's again is the topic for tomorrow, but today we're talking about the Vanaprastha ashram, that everyone should accept the life of a Vanaprastha at the age of 50. Maharaj! You know, and on it went. And it was clear enough that I wasn't at the time suggesting sannyas, but the mere thought even of Vanaprastha life was so unpalatable that these devotees were, as they say, to borrow a term from one of our favorite disciplines, in denial. You know, they didn't want to hear what they were hearing or didn't want it to apply to them. Even though they're very good devotees and nicely engaged in devotional service, still one becomes so much accustomed to living as a family man that the thought of packing it all in is frightening. Where will I go? What will I do? how will my life, my wife get along? How? What about the kids? What about this? What about that? How will, you know, they'll mess everything up if I don't watch over them? And how will things go on? So Prabhupada presented himself as though an ordinary man of this world and said that he was also thinking like that. Okay. That concludes the first division of the joys of breaking intimate relationships. And now we're ready for the second division of transcendental enjoyment, breaking the intimate relations of others. There are many examples of this also in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura provides an excellent example how he delivered his brother Dhritarashtra from the entanglement of what was really a terrible householder life. All of his sons had been killed by the Pandavas, especially by Bhima. And Dhritarashtra, after the battle, was living in the homes of the Pandavas, under the illusion that he was the royal uncle of the Pandavas and so on. So Vidura spoke very strongly that you're living like a dog on the scraps handed to you by the Pandavas who've killed your sons, and your hearing is gone and your liver is weak and your teeth are full. And still you're hanging on in illusion. So by the words of Vidura, Dhritarashtra was freed from his illusions and left his life of entanglement. A fine example is provided by Narad Muni again, particularly in relationship to the sons of Daksha Maharaj. Daksha is Prajapati. Daksha means expert, and Prajapati means a progenitor, begetter of children. So that was his particular area of expertise, begetting children. He begot thousands of them. And Narad Muni came upon one of these groups, the Haryashvas, who had been sent off by their father to practice austerity in preparation for householder life. Because Daksha was still a cultured member of the Vedic society, he wanted to see his sons become brahmacharis so that they'd be prepared for householder life. And Narad Muni came and saw that these are such nice boys, qualified young boys. Why should they get entangled in householder life? Desiring to train his sons to become grihasthas fully equipped with knowledge, Daksha had sent them to execute austerities by Narayan Saras, a lake. Narad Muni, however, taking advantage of their highly elevated position in austerity, instructed them to become Vaishnavas in the renounced order. This is the duty of Narad Muni and his followers. They must show everyone the path of renouncing this material world and returning home back to Godhead. Prajapati Daksha, however, could not see the exaltedness of the duties Narad Muni performed in relation to his sons. Unable to appreciate Narad Muni's behavior, Daksha accused Narad of being asadhu, not a sadhu. One who is too involved in his material environment and does not look within the core of his heart is increasingly entangled in the illusory energy. Narad Muni's purpose was to get the sons of Prajapati Daksha to divert their attention towards spiritual realization instead of involving themselves in the ordinary but complicated affairs of propagation. You were asking about our previous families. Prabhupada mentions The Haryashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were certainly well-behaved, learned, and advanced. And in accordance with the order of their father, they went to perform austerities to beget good sons for their family. But Narad Muni took advantage of their good behavior and culture to properly direct them not to be involved with this material world, but to use their culture and knowledge to end their material affairs. The Haryashvas abided by the order of Narad Muni, but when news of this was brought to Prajapati Daksha, instead of being happy with the actions of Narad Muni, he was extremely sorrowful. He cursed Narad Muni for his benevolent activities. This is the way of materialistic life. A materialistic father and mother want to engage their sons in begetting children, striving for improved economic conditions, and rotting in materialistic life. They are not unhappy when their children become spoiled, useless citizens, but they lament when they join the Krishna consciousness movement to achieve the ultimate goal of life. This animosity between parents and the Krishna consciousness movement has existed since time immemorial. Even Narad Muni was condemned not to speak of others. Nevertheless, Narad Muni never gives up his mission. To deliver as many fallen souls as possible, he continues playing his musical instrument and vibrating the transcendental sound, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Further purport here.
We have a little time?
Yeah. Generally, a grihastha thinks that unless one enters grihastha life, he cannot properly enter the renounced order. Does this sound familiar to you? Anyone hearing a familiar theme making the rounds these days? Okay. Yeah? Heard it before? Okay. Generally, a grihastha thinks that unless one enters grihastha life, he cannot properly enter the renounced order. If a young man immediately adopts the path of the renounced order in accordance with the instructions of Narad or a member of his disciplic succession, his parents become very angry. This same phenomenon is occurring in our Krishna consciousness movement because we are instructing all the young boys in the Western countries to follow the path of renunciation. We allow grihastha life, but a grihastha also follows the path of renunciation. Even a grihastha has to give up so many bad habits that his parents think that his life has been practically destroyed. Therefore, parents sometimes dislike our movement, just as Prajapati Daksha disliked the activities of Narad and accused Narad of dishonesty. Nevertheless, although parents may be angry at us, we must perform our duty without hesitation because we are in the disciplic succession of Narad Muni. So, Daksha Maharaj, Prajapati Daksha was not very happy. He accused Narad Muni in so many ways. In one verse, he called him Sauradagnam, a breaker of friendship, because Narad Muni and the members of his disciplic succession disrupt friendships and family life. They are sometimes accused of being Sauradagnam, creators of enmity between relatives. Actually, such devotees are friends of every living entity, Suradam Sarvabhutanam, but they are misunderstood to be enemies. Further, it's quite a chapter, this Canto 6, Chapter 5. People addicted to householder life wonder how one can give up the enjoyment of grihastha life, which is a concession for sex enjoyment, simply to become a mendicant in Krishna consciousness. They do not know that the householder's concession for sex life cannot be regulated unless one accepts the life of a mendicant. This is really an essential item here in Varnashram Dharma. Lots of times when we hear people talking about Varnashram, we need Varnashram development, we have to form a Varnashram society, we have to mold the Krishna consciousness movement in such a way that we really emphasize Varnashram. If you decode it, what they really are saying by that word Varnashram is Grihastha Ashram. It means we have to focus on economic development, on bringing up our children, on relationships between husband and wife, upon relationships between families. That's what they're talking about, which is fine. That does need to be developed. But that's not the whole story. And because we're, as Ravindra Sarup Prabhu said, an embryonic movement, we're still in our youthful period of development as a movement, we haven't really seen yet the development of the Vanaprastha Ashram or even the mature development of the Sannyasa Ashram as a sequel to married life. Most of our members joined when they were in their late teens or early 20s. So we haven't gotten the opportunity to see the full ashram system in action or manifested. But that was some 30 years ago. So now the time is coming upon us when some of those young men who joined in their teens and 20s are now becoming eligible, according to the clock. Eligible also in terms of their personal qualifications, but also obliged by the clock to accept the next order of ashram development, the Vanaprastha Ashram. The householder has a license for living in the association of women, but that license is a limited license. It has a price. One has to support all three of the other ashrams of society, and it has an expiry date. And when the license expires, one is obliged to give up one's home and move on to the next destination, namely the forest, or a place like Vrindavan. So that's part of regulated life, and it's important also for the grihasthas to see that Vanaprastha, the devotees following the duties of Vanaprasthas. The full society means there have to be brahmacharis, there should be grihasthas, and there should also be Vanaprasthas and sannyasis. That creates or helps create a sober atmosphere in the society. By seeing the their parents accepting the Vanaprastha ashram and eventually sannyas, the younger generation understands that I'm not going to be in householder life forever. And if I dig myself deeper and deeper into a materialistic way of life, a way of so-called enjoyment, how am I ever going to get out and move on to the next stage? So it's important both for their own benefit and to set the example for others that in the mature stage, the grihasthas move on to the next ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram. The Vedic civilization therefore enjoins that at the end of one's 50th year, one must give up household life. This is compulsory. However, because modern civilization is misled, householders want to remain in family life until death, and therefore they are suffering. In such cases, the disciples of Narad Muni advise all the members of the younger generation to join the Krishna consciousness movement immediately. There is nothing wrong in this. Narad Muni goes after the members of the younger generation or the members of the older generation, everyone, to encourage them in renounced life. Yes?
Kumaras are the vanaprastas supposed to be spoiled by their own children, who are then grihastas?
Are the vanaprastas supposed to be supported by their own children, who are grihastas? They can't, they may be. Vanaprastha means that he depends more on Krishna. And it's not only the duty of his own children, but the members of, all the members of the grihastha ashram, to see to the welfare of the vanaprastas. Not just, well, this is my father, this is my mother, but the grihastas in general have to see to the welfare of the vanaprastas. Therefore, it's the system in India especially, that in conjunction with the holy places, there are places where the vanaprastas can stay without any payment, or very nominal payment. In fact, when Vidura was traveling and he returned to Hastinapur, that was one of the questions put to him. How did you live? Where did you stay? And it was understood that he must have stayed at one of these chhatris, one of these dharmashalas, established by the rich men for the specific purpose of the of aiding the vanaprastas who are traveling from holy place to holy place. In the holy places, therefore temple means prasadam. And wherever you go, the vanaprastas should be able to go to any temple, and there's some place where they can stay, some modest accommodation, and there's prasadam for them, and there's darshan, and there's speaking about the glories of the Lord, and there's some service for them to perform. In Nathdwar, you see that there are retired people, they go, or any people, grihasthas, retired people, they go, and there's an arrangement for them to serve the deity also. They can help cutting the vegetables and doing stringing garlands and so on. So they get the opportunity to serve the deity, even though they're only stationed there for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. So society should have such an arrangement. And unfortunately, we have our ISKCON society. Any grihastha who's serious in spiritual life and willing to render service can go to any one of our ISKCON temples and be welcome there. Oh, you want to do some cooking for the deity? You want to string a garland? You want to clean the temple? You want to do something? Then he'll be very much welcome. Even if he just wants to stay for a couple of days, just chant Hare Krishna, read Srimad Bhagavatam, attend the classes. So it's a wonderful society with centers all over the world, and especially in so many holy places in India, we have our centers. So the grihasthas can take advantage of the centers that have been built by the energy of the youthful members of the Krishna consciousness movement, including themselves in former days. They can go to these temples and take advantage and live without anxiety. They don't have to see to their business, they don't have to see to the income tax, they don't have to see to the children and this and that, the other thing. They go to the temples and chant Hare Krishna and serve Krishna, hear about Krishna. Huh? And their life becomes free from anxieties, free from attachment, free from anger and fear and envy and illusion and intoxication, mada moha, kam krodh lobh, mada matsarya, free. Life becomes purified and happy. So that's there. And naturally the younger children should feel responsible that if my parents need some help, they should naturally be the first ones to step forward and assist. But in any case, the children may be helping or not helping, but at the mature stage one should think, but now it's my duty, let me go. And Krishna will take care. And he will.
Mm-hmm. Is there a special yajna to initiate this vanaprastha?
Is there a special yajna? I don't know of any special yajna.
And dress? Should the husband wear saffron or wine?
As far as I know, saffron. The vanaprastas wear saffron. Vanaprastha men. Wife, I don't know. But she gives up dressing nicely. That description is there. You'll find it in Srimad Bhagavatam. And vanaprastha ashram, because the wife dresses nicely to create an atmosphere of happiness and enjoyment in family life. So in that way, the husband becomes pleased and the home is nice, and that's the wife's duty at that time. nice home, nice children, everything clean, everything comfortable, nice food, nice. But in Vanaprastha Ashram, her duty changes. Then she has to assist the husband in austerities. So when she's dressed like a peacock and she's, you know, fit to kill and she's not helping. She's at cross purposes. So the wife in the Vanaprastha Ashram also lives very austerely. She dresses very plainly. The cosmetics are left behind. And it's described, she doesn't even cut her hair or just lets it mat up and so on. So we'll see how far it will go in the modern context. But at least we can understand the idea that, you know, that life of opulent, bubbly kind of enjoyment, that's when you're kids. Or older, up to the age of 50, you can carry on with that. Then social life and all of that stuff is finished at 50. It's mentioned that there are different fall downs in the Varnashram system. For a brahmachari not to follow the orders of the spiritual master, not to practice austerity, that's a fall down. For the grihastha not to follow the regulative principles, that's a fall down. For the vanaprastha to start hanging out in the village again and engaging in social affairs, that's a fall down. And with the sannyasi to go back to family life or be engaged in association of women, that's a fall down. So these different kinds of that discrepant of deviation from duty are there. And one has to follow his duty in the four ashrams. Yes, Vajrayana.
So I wanted to have some comment on this. I'm not that old, but I'm noticing as I get older, I'm more set in my ways and more, I function now more, I need my set, you know, I need my office like this, and my computer like that, and I need, you know, a hot water like this, you know, things that I didn't think of when I was a brahmachari. And,
yes.
And as I talk to devotees who are, you know, maybe 10 years older than me, they say they will get more like that as they get older. And so it seems like, you know, nature is heading in that direction, but the Vanaprastha and Sannyas ashrams are heading in the opposite direction.
That's maybe partly so, but especially for one who's a little awakened in spiritual life, it doesn't quite work that way. Because for one thing, the senses are becoming, at that age, unsuitable for gratification. The sense of taste doesn't work the same way. Nothing works the same way. You don't get the same, they're not fit for the same sort of pleasure. Apart from that, toward that age, 50 years or a little before, a little after, householder life starts to become uncongenial. One doesn't get the same, one's not satisfied. Previously, one was so happy to come home and his wife was there and the kids were there and, you know, it was a very source of enjoyment for him. But as you get older, those things become stale. And you're coming home to the same stale biscuits every day. You know, life has become like that. You come home to the same place and the same woman and the same scene. It becomes unpalatable, and therefore people want to change. But if they're not properly under discipline, or if they're not hearing and chanting, if they're under the influence of the illusory energy, then the change they look for is to go retrograde. So that the woman who should be arranging for the marriage of her children is busy arranging for her own second marriage. The man who should be detaching himself from married life is detaching himself from one marriage and looking for the next. And entrapping himself at just the time when he should be getting freedom, just the time when he's eligible. You know, it's like the prisoner who's eligible for parole, you know, after 30 years, 40 years in prison, his parole's coming up, and, you know, he beats a guard over the head or something. Okay, 30 years more. Huh? So it's like that. When just when you're becoming eligible for parole, you've worked so hard, and now you're becoming eligible to get out of all those responsibilities, you go retrograde and say, you know, where's my second wife? Where's my third wife? Where's my fourth wife? It's a great misfortune. It's a great misfortune for the person. Aside from being a social disturbance, it's also a great misfortune for that person, man or woman. If it's a woman, then she's stealing somebody else's husband. Because now she's been through it, so whichever husband she gets, that he was meant for somebody else. So she picks him up and creates social disorder. Or he chucks his old wife and picks up a new one. And it's going on in the Karmi society, and it goes on in our society when one develops a mentality tinged by the illusions of the Karmis. So one who's properly trained knows how to take advantage of what the hormones are doing at that stage of life. You know, things are not shooting off in you know, every pore of your body the same way. It calms down. The senses get weaker. When the senses are strong in youth, they're harder to control. It's harder to be detached. But as they calm down or just lose their grip in as one gets older, then one should break free. And he'll be enjoy a happier life as a vanaprastha, actually become happy. He may think it's a little painful that how can I leave my home? I'm so, everything's in the right place, everything's... But when he leaves, after he leaves, then he'll think, ah, this was good. And therefore it's mentioned in the previous verse that we read, that those who have accepted the vanaprastha life, they lament about their previous material attachments. But when he's free, he thinks, oh, this is great. Drew Karma Prabhu?
So it seemed like one conclusion of that Varnashram system would be that the Vanaprasthas and sannyasis should be less involved in social affairs, hence less involved in managing social affairs. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, of course it seems like in our society it's...
Jiva Karmaprabhu says that it would seem from the description of things that the sannyasis and vanaprasthas should be less involved in social affairs and therefore less involved in management, whereas we see that in our case, it's in our society, it often goes the other way. Yes, one time Srila Prabhupada was meeting with some devotees who were making the point that the temple managers should all be sannyasis, so that the brahmacharis would have good examples to follow. And Prabhupada countered that actually all the managers should be grihasthas. All the temple presidents should be grihasthas, because the sannyasi is supposed to have a cool brain. And how can he have a cool brain when he's entangled in management? So the case can be made that the vanaprasthas and sannyasis should be freed from these things. From another angle of vision, one may take it that after having to manage a family, to manage an ISKCON center is a piece of cake. Prabhupada quotes that in Kali Yuga it's more difficult to run a kingdom than to run a family. So ISKCON temple means that the affairs are all connected with the deities and the spiritual activities of the temple. So if a mature person takes that responsibility, then that may be all right. So the case, Prabhupada actually argued it from both angles. So we could also do the same thing. Let's just see how long this last one is. Prabhupada, I'll just give this very briefly. Daksha Maharaj gives the argument that one should first get involved in material enjoyment, because unless he experiences the distress of that enjoyment, how will he renounce? Whereas if he experiences that distress, he'll automatically renounce. Prabhupada answers that it doesn't happen that way. A woman gets pregnant and says, you know, I'll never go through this again. And then next thing you know, she's pregnant again. Or a man gets entangled in materialistic activities, but still he never gets up the determination to leave. Under the circumstances, unless one gets the association of a devotee like Narad Muni or his servant in the disciplic succession, one's dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awakened. The young boys and girls of the Krishna consciousness movement have given up the spirit of material enjoyment, not because of practice, but by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. One needs the blessings of a devotee like Narad Muni, then one can renounce his attachment for the material world. So the whole world is attached materially, but we should take advantage of the association of our Krishna consciousness movement. Whatever ashram we're in, Brahmacharya ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, Sannyasa ashram, we should take advantage of the potency of the method of hearing and chanting. We should take advantage of the association of devotees. We should take full advantage of the process of devotional service so that we can remain detached or cultivate detachment throughout the entire life of devotional service in whatever ashram we may be. And if we get the opportunity, we see that someone is stuck, that he's going in the wrong direction, in whatever ashram he's becoming materially entangled, then we can try and do him a kindness by awakening his sense of detachment from matter and attachment to the service of Krishna. And do I take a question? We're really over time now. Yes, Priya Vrata. He got married as a matter of duty. And therefore he continued in his activities without attachment. Okay, so we're all very much attached to one another, but it's time to go. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.